This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In the preface to his new book, Internal Medicine, Dr. Terrence Holt remembers a particular moment at the hospital. He was standing in the middle of a scrum of doctors, all talking at once. His pager is vibrating. He has three patients to see. And in the middle of this chaos, he thinks, you could not write a story about this. You see, before he was a doctor, Terrence Holt was a fiction writer, so he's thinking about stories. And so, of course, he can and he must write a story about that experience. And he does. In his new story collection, Internal Medicine, he writes not one, but many heartbreaking stories about practicing medicine. Plus, he clues us in on a little secret. Doctors are made, they are not born. And these stories show how that happens. He's here to talk about a few of them. Terrence Holt is the author of Internal Medicine, A Doctor's Stories. He's also professor of social and geriatric medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine at Chapel Hill. Welcome to Science Friday.
It's good to be here, Ira.
You were a creative writing professor. You have a midlife crisis, so you decided to become a doctor? Is that how this works?
Well, I couldn't afford a red convertible, so this was the next best. You know, it was midlife. Not that I was willing to acknowledge that at the time, but you reach a certain age and people you know start to get sick. And I found myself spending a lot of time keeping people company in doctors' waiting rooms and sometimes going in to see doctors with them. And I met a lot of different doctors, and a couple really impressed me with what they did, which was mainly listen to the story and try to understand it.
Mm-hmm. So to the doctors, so at 40, you decided you went to med school at 40, and you found out what it's like to be a doctor. Do doctors and writers have anything in common?
Yeah. We're both deeply engaged in trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, both are deeply interpretive acts, and I mean, what both writers and doctors, I think, do more than say a literary scholar is, you also try to intervene in the story and change it.
Mm-hmm. So you were a resident. The stories about in your book are about residency. What is residency? What makes it such a challenging time for doctors? Is it just the workload, the hours you have to work there?
Residency started in this country a little over 100 years ago when hospitals made a trade with newly graduated doctors. They just gotten their MDs, and the trade was you come and live in the hospital and do all the work, and we'll give you more training. Mm. And out of that has come this pretty elaborate institution in which I think now in every state in the union you have to get some residency training before you can practice. And depending on what specialty, it'll go from 3 years to, you know, 8, 9, 10, where you are in the hospital long hours. It's a deep immersion form of education, and you're taking care of patients basically under the supervision of more experienced people, but you're up to your neck in it.
So it obviously leaves a really deep imprint on you that you remember years later.
Yeah. It's, the metaphor that always leaps to mind is it's a crucible. You go in at one kind of person and come out of it another.
Mm-hmm. Now, these aren't really fiction stories. They're not exactly nonfiction stories. What's your method here?
Well, the method came out of what I was trying to do initially was simply make sense of what had happened to me. I didn't premeditate this as a book, but mm-hmm. after a while, I realized that my decision to give up writing when I went to medical school had probably been a little premature, and this probably was going to get published. And I felt the need to do so, partly out of that moment you mentioned earlier from the introduction, but also because medicine and hospitals in general don't get well represented in popular culture, even though they're all over. I mean, you can't turn on a TV set without stumbling over some medical scene. And even though those shows work really hard at, you know, they have consultants, they try to get their facts right, watching one of those shows is like getting cable from another planet. It's all the details are right, and yet it's all completely wrong. And what's mainly wrong about it is that the actors there aren't acting like the people I know. There's a kind of emotional intensity that a good actor generates that if a doctor I was working with started to display, I would start to worry about that person. And this is not to fault the people who make up these TV shows. They're in the business of entertainment, not medicine. But the effect I see this have on patients is if you're in the hospital for the first time, you're sick, you're vulnerable, you're scared. And coming to the realization that this is not a world where everything works out all right, this is not a world where people form immediate and deep emotional bonds, but it's an enormous and largely impersonal institution where you're just one of hundreds and hundreds of patients, that can be really, really hard.
Finding out that you're like sausage in a factory.
Well, yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you've seen on TV everything else, you know. Dr. House works like crazy to find only your cure. And that's not
right,
that's not what's
exactly
going on in the hospital.
Yeah, it's not personal.
Yeah. So do you think that this is something people need to know before they go into a hospital? Not to, you know, not to have too much to expect, not to get up their hopes up too high?
I think it would probably help. I mean, it's bad enough to be sick and dependent on other people without feeling that they're letting you down.
Hmm.
Because they're not really. I mean, the other thing that goes on in hospitals is people work fantastically hard, harder than you're going to see groups of people work, all really working very hard to try to get you better. But they're not, you know, they're not actors on TV. They're not doing the kinds of things that we turn to entertainment for. They're doing other things,
mm-hmm.
and it's good if you're able to understand that.
Mm-hmm. See, your character in the book, Dr. Harper. So Dr. Harper is you, and he isn't you.
Well, that gets back to your question, which I think I didn't answer. I wanted to write a book that people could understand as an honest portrayal of what it looks like from the doctor's end of it. But you can't write about your patients that way. So I had to make the patients different people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ever want anybody thinking that, you know, when I'm doctoring, I'm collecting material. I mean, that's not it. The two are very different activities. And once you change that in very central part of the story, other things start to change as well, including the narrator. He does things that I didn't do and doesn't do some things I did. But around those, you know, inclusions of fiction, everything else is stuff that you see in the hospital all the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm. You talk about you have a chapter called A Sign of Weakness about a doctor's first night on call. Very illuminating. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. It used to be, we don't do it this way anymore, that the intern would be in the hospital overnight every three or four nights to just to put out whatever fires started up in the night. And I was being on call. And this is the first night, which is a pretty terrifying experience. And just as he's going into it, he runs into an older doctor that he knows who tells him an old story about his first night on call when his resident said to him, "If you need me, I'll be just behind that door. But remember, it's a sign of weakness." And this poor guy takes that to heart. He gets involved in a horrible situation where a patient starts to die on him. And there's nothing to be done, really. She can't be saved, but he's up all night trying anyway. And by the time dawn comes around, the patient has died, and he meets up with his resident again, who says, "You should have called me." And the guy asks why, and the resident says, "Well, you know, we could at least have gone through it together." The real sign of weakness in that story is thinking, if you're a doctor, that you're not supposed to have any weaknesses. And that's, I think, the first lesson this guy learns is that he's got them. And mm-hmm. you're going to do better if you know that. Mm-hmm. And knowing when to ask for help is a very important skill.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Harper is always worrying that he's stopped caring. You wrote the story Heart Failure about that. What happens in that story?
That's set on the cardiology ward. Mm-hmm. And the narrator admits a patient with what he doesn't know at the time is going to be her last admission, end-stage heart failure. And there's something about her from the start that rubs him the wrong way, and he decides from the get-go that he hates her. Now, we're not supposed to like our patients. We're not supposed to hate them. We're supposed to treat everybody the same. And I think he does. He's a conscientious guy. But even so, he really, you know, he doesn't like her. And over the course of the next week or so, as she takes a turn for the worse and it becomes clear that she's going to die, the two of them are drawn closer and closer. In fact, she draws him out of this dark hole that he's in. He's been on call for month after month, and the cardiology unit is a real grueling marathon. You're up all night every 3 nights, and he's barely human anymore. At least that's what he thinks. And you know, so what the heart failure, the title, is really his heart failure.
Yeah.
And she gets him out of that. And the fact that she's the one who rescues him is one of those moments of grace that the hospital does seem to generate from time to time.
Very often
when good things, excuse me?
I was going to say, did you have that in yourself? Did you have that moment? Did you get rescued by
I think everybody goes through that dark night. I mean, you're working so hard and you're so stressed. I mean, everybody, I think, has this experience. You come in the morning and the person who's on call tells you that one of your patients died overnight. And before you think of it, before you're aware of it, you hear yourself say, good, as you cross that name off your list. And why it's good is, well, your workload just got reduced by a few cents. And, you know, 5 minutes later, you're in a closet somewhere beating yourself up. How could you possibly say something like that? Yeah. But, you know, the workload is immense, and it can be real easy to lose track of all the incredibly important things that are going on around you.
Did you feel you lost part of your humanity?
Well, if I did, I think I got it back when I was done. It's something you worry about. It's something that I think you should worry about.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening to the people around you, the people you're taking care of, is sometimes the critical moment in their lives. And what's happening to you in that pressure cooker is a lot of very deep emotional stuff is being rewired. And I think you should worry about it, because you do see some people just check out. Some people stop displaying any kind of sympathy with the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that to happen to you.
Do you think there could ever be a show that actually portrays the truth about what's going on in a hospital?
No, it wouldn't be very interesting at all. It's not dramatic. Medicine isn't really remotely about drama.
Yeah,
it's a job that people come into and work at hard and then go home.
Talking with Terrence Holt, author of Internal Medicine, A Doctor's Story, on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I wonder, in giving bad news in that chapter, Dr. Harper has to tell a patient he has cancer, and I have a passage that you've agreed to read, a passage from that story for us. Could you do that?
Yeah, be happy to. The story is, it's pretty early on in the residency. This guy's still very green. And he's admitted a patient with pneumonia, and it turns out that what he's got actually is esophageal cancer, which is a very bad thing. And he gets the result of the test that tells him that pretty late in the evening. It's like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And he thinks he has to go in and tell the guy. Okay. So he's just entered the patient's room and awakened the patient. "Mr. Jenkins," I began. He nodded at me encouragingly. "I'm afraid I've got some bad news." For a horrible 10 or 12 seconds, the smile lingered on his face while the rest of his features abandoned it until it hung there in the empty air. "That test we did this afternoon?" He nodded. "It found a mass." This wasn't right, I realized. I should just name it. "They found cancer, Mr. Jenkins. That's why you've been having trouble swallowing. That's why you've been losing weight." I stopped for a moment, unable to go on. In the silence that lay between us, I recalled dimly that I was supposed to do this, supposed to give the patient time to grasp the news. Reassured by this, I let the silence grow. Finally, his voice coming with effort, Mr. Jenkins said, "What's it gonna do?" Patients have this terrifying ability to ask the question, the one of all others you don't want laid at your feet. I could feel myself start to choke. The easy answer, the immediate one, was, I don't know. But I couldn't bring myself to say it. It would be too palpably a lie, because I did know. We both knew. But I couldn't say that either.
Wow. That's very... Harper has to give Mr. Jenkins the bad news three more times, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I actually wrote this story because somebody said to me, you know, your work is all so grim. Can't you write something funny?
Yeah.
And I tried, and the story, actually, people do laugh when I read this, but the joke is on the doctor, which is where it ought to be. Yeah, he has to tell this guy the bad news again and again and again because the guy has a neurologic problem that prevents him from remembering things. And he's richly punished for thinking that he for wanting to go give the guy the bad news. I mean, sometimes having information makes us feel powerful, and sometimes you see people who actually try to generate drama in the hospital, and this was an example of just how that might go wrong.
Yeah. So this was your attempt at sort of lightening the situation up.
Yeah, it didn't work all that well. It's not a story that you'd want to see turned into a 30-minute sitcom, for instance.
Any follow-ups to your book at all?
I'm working now on another book. It's about, I don't know, one-third of the way finished, and it's a little bit like this one. It's a little bit like an earlier book I wrote, which was not remotely about hospitals.
Well, this one is a terrific, terrific read. It's really eye-opening, so to speak. And thank you for taking the time to be with us today, and wish you good luck on the book.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Terrence Holt is author of Internal Medicine, A Doctor's Story. He's also professor of social and geriatric medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. If you want to read an excerpt before going out and buying it, you can go to sciencefriday.com/internalmedicine. It's a really interesting read.